Welcome to the first in a series of audio CDs addressing the most common questions nutrition professionals ask about the process of counseling clients. My name is Molly Kellogg. I've been a registered dietitian since 1980 and a licensed clinical social worker since 1994. When I'm not doing nutrition counseling or psychotherapy, I'm leading trainings and providing supervision for health professionals on counseling excellence nationwide. That's the work I love the most, helping people like you to accelerate your skills for better results. If you don't already receive my Counseling Tips for Nutrition Therapists email series, it's free and easy to subscribe to on my website. Let me tell you what makes these CDs unique. Instead of focusing on the content of nutrition, we will be addressing the process. I invite you now to attend to what goes on between you and your clients, the how of your sessions. You can learn to interact more effectively with your clients, to open up new possibilities for them and for you. This will apply to all kinds of nutrition counseling, from diabetes and cardiac care to eating disorders and sports. As you listen to this conversation, I suggest you notice how I work. Part of my intent here is to rub off on you. When I'm working with Helen, attend to the ways I interact with her in addition to the content of what I say. There may be language I use here that you will choose to adopt. You may detect in this conversation that I suggest to Helen that she adopt a profoundly client-centered approach to her work. She, like many new dietitians, tends to lose sight of the client in her effort to do her job competently. So here's the first question.
Well, Molly, one of the things I was wondering about is, how do you get clients to come back after the first visit? I think I do a good job the first visit, and they seem to like me, and they seem enthusiastic about making changes, but change happens over time, and I want them to come back and when they run into trouble, but they don't always come back.
They don't come back right. For you. Is that, yeah. And that's what you've found, mm-hmm. that you think you've connected with them.
Right.
But then they don't come back.
Yeah.
And I also hear you saying that you're aware that change doesn't happen in just one visit. You may be a miracle worker, but may have a magic wand. But I think it sounds like you're aware that isn't the way it works.
I think I try to make them aware of that, too, that this is a process.
Well, let's take a step back for a minute first, Helen. Let's look at the larger environment that you're working in. You mentioned that you work in a hospital, outpatient mm-hmm. clinic, mm-hmm. And so I presume there are other people who maybe refer the clients to you and maybe someone else who does the scheduling, because
right.
that's often the way it works, I mm-hmm. know. And so it wouldn't be a bad idea to chat with those people and find out what they say to the patients and what impression they give about what is to be expected when they meet with a dietitian. Because, of course, sometimes the patient may have been given the idea that it will be just one visit.
Oh.
And so I would talk with those people, whether it's the doctor, the nurse, the receptionist, and make sure they give a really clear picture of that this is a process, that it's mm-hmm. a number of visits. So that's part of the environment.
Okay.
If that's particularly true, if you're not the one making the appointment on the phone,
right?
If there is a situation where you actually talk to the client before they come in, you're actually on the phone with them making mm-hmm. the appointment, you could also bring it up even then, even mm-hmm. before you actually meet them. You could briefly ask them what they imagine, whether they're looking for one visit or an ongoing process. You could ask them briefly what if they've met with a dietitian before, because if they haven't, that's even better, because then you have a chance to really educate them mm-hmm. about, well, let me just let you know that the way I usually work is the first few sessions, we're assessing the situation and beginning to give you ideas what to do, for example. Or you could say to them something like, the way I work is I have at least three sessions with people because I know it takes a long time to make changes. Mm. So you can do that educating right at the beginning, right at the outset.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the ideas. And to keep it in mind, another thing to keep in mind, Helen, is what's going on in your head about what you expect. For example, What do you expect to cover in the first session? If you're expecting to cover all of the facts, all the education that they need in the first session, I think you're setting yourself up for this, right?
Yeah.
So if you remind yourself at the beginning of each intake session, initial session with a client, that this is just an intake, that you'll get a lot of the assessment done, you'll give the client a few things to work on. And I know that's hard, particularly, I know you've only been practicing, you said, a year or two. And, and especially at the beginning, it's easy to think, oh, I have to do everything at once.
Well, and I realize I might be a little anxious because I'm afraid they won't come back.
Right. And you know what? Some of them aren't going to come back, Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
For their own reasons, having nothing to do with you and nothing to do with the change process, for that matter. I don't know. They may leave town. They may, whatever. Mm-hmm. Some of them may not come back. You're absolutely right. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't proceed as if you're engaging in a process with them. As if you're going to provide a certain amount at the first visit and then you're going to invite them to continue to work with you. Because I hear you saying that you know that it is an ongoing process, that people don't make changes overnight.
Right.
And you've tried to tell people that.
Right.
Keep reminding yourself of that, too. Of course, it's also important in the first visit to develop rapport. And just from spending a few minutes with you, I can tell you're probably pretty good at that. You're a real people kind of person. Most of us who went into dietetics are, you know. And so you're good at developing the rapport. Some of the other things you can remind yourself to focus on are things like really, really listening to what the client is bringing into the room. Because a client who leaves the first visit thinking, oh, she gets me. She understands how hard this is for me, or she understands really what I want. That kind of person's more apt to come back.
Yeah.
Even if you dumped a whole lot of really good information on them, if they miss that piece, they may be a little less apt to come back. So that may mean you taking a little more time in the first session, reviewing what their goals are, what they really want. And you might want to review some of the counseling tips that I've written, particularly the one about unpacking meaning, unpacking what is important to the client. For example, if what is important to them is to lose weight, what does that mean? What would it really give them? What would losing weight mean to them in the long run? And if they've heard what it is, or if you've heard what they want, and then at the end of the session wind up with, you know what I really heard you say earlier was that you really want to avoid the complications of diabetes, or you really want to be able to be more active to be with your grandchildren, and that means weighing less. Whatever it is you heard from them, if you repeat it back right at the end, you can also segue into, let's work on that together. We've made a little progress with that today, but let's hold on to that goal together. Does that feel helpful?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And it gives, I mean, it gives them a reason for coming back too. I mean, it really, I've got something that I am going to accomplish.
And we're working on this together. And let's see if I have any other ideas. Well, we touched on already that there are going to be some clients who don't come back. Part of the reason for that is they might not be ready to make the changes. They may be there in your office because the doctor told them to be. Or because their spouse made them, or because there was a little part of them that really does want to change. But once they're sitting down with you and talking about it, they may realize that there's also a bigger part that isn't ready. And, you know, sure, you can explore that with them. You can explore their confidence to change, the concepts of motivational interviewing that I talk about in some of my other counseling tips. But it's only one session, and you might not be able to accomplish everything. You might not be able to move them forward. And hey, but if you've connected with them some, they may come back at some later date. And that's the way it goes.
Okay.
Well, I hope this has been helpful.
Yes, I think it has been. Thanks. Okay. What should I do when a patient comes back and hasn't done any of the things that we've talked about?
So this is when your clients do come back,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't done anything.
No.
Yeah.
Nothing I've suggested.
Right. That does happen, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, congratulations that they come back. But let's figure out what to do then. Sounds like you feel stumped at that point.
Well, yeah. Yes. I just don't
know what to do.
I mean, did I say the wrong thing? Did I plan it too much?
Or? Yeah, it sounds like you do what a lot of us do, is you think, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes sense instead to turn it around in your head and think about it from the client's point of view. One of my suggestions is, Helen, is first to treat it as if it was an experiment that the client was doing, or that they had said that they were going to do. And the experiment didn't go as planned. But there's always something still to learn from it, from an experiment, even when it doesn't run right. For example, if a client comes back in and says they didn't go shopping and get all the foods that I suggested, for example, I'll say, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, we had talked about that, and you thought you were going to be able to do it on Tuesday, and I'll be darn. That's interesting. So, what is it that happened? What got in the way for you? You know?
Wow, that turns it around completely.
Yeah, and you turn your curiosity on it, as opposed to judgment, mm-hmm. which the client may be thinking that you're going to beat them up or something.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, just get really curious. I'll be darn. We really thought you were going to do that. So what got in the way? So using whatever you can learn, there's going to be something to learn from it. So if you, Helen, can manage to turn your curiosity, basically, mm-hmm. on the situation, does that sound helpful?
Well, it does. And of course, you know, the first thing I think about is, oh, I should do that in the beginning.
Well, that's an idea, too. Yeah. Getting curious with clients, even as you're setting up these experiments mm-hmm. With them. The other thing that I would always assume when that happens, when a client comes back and I really thought they were going to do something and they didn't, I realize that means I have to back up a whole bunch of steps,
mm-hmm.
right? So take a deep breath and think to myself, okay, we missed something. We missed something that's important to the client. You know, a minute ago we were talking about getting into what is important to the client and really eliciting that. So sometimes if a client comes back and didn't do it, you need to say, oh, let's go back a bunch of steps, Joe, mm-hmm. or whatever. Remind me what it is you came in here for. Remind me what it is you want, what is important to you, what do you want to get out of this, so that you're backing up a bunch of steps.
And you make it a different answer.
Yeah, exactly, because you may not have gotten to it before. And you may also get to more at what is getting in the way for him,
mm-hmm.
For this particular client. Backing up also helps you and the client break it down into smaller pieces, because it may turn out that the behavior needs to be broken down. If it's a matter of shopping for certain foods, turns out first he may have to learn how to make a shopping list, you know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there may be other smaller steps to figure out, or he may need to decide what store to go to. The other thing, Helen, you could choose to do in a situation like that, when a client comes back in and hasn't done what they even thought they agreed to do, it can be very interesting to notice their attitude and their response, because as I'm sure you know, a lot of clients will come in and they'll be beating themselves up and they'll say, mm-hmm. oh, you're going to hate me, or you're going to be mad at me, or, you know, oh, I was so bad, you know, that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And as you and I know, that doesn't get anybody anywhere. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help when somebody beats themselves up. So do notice the attitude they're taking and see how quickly you can turn it around. Turning your curiosity on it
mm-hmm.
is one way to turn it around, but also basically refusing to get involved in the beating themselves up is a good idea. Some clients may actually be, instead of being feeling ashamed, they may actually be defiant. You may almost feel like
they're like, okay, you didn't make me do it, you know, which can feel pretty awful on our end.
Or that it's kind of a joke.
Right, exactly. Yeah, or I told you I couldn't do it, you know, mm-hmm. or something like, you know, you feel like you have a six-year-old. And if that's the case, you need to counteract that. And the best way to do that is to acknowledge, yep, I can't make you do anything. You know, it is your choice. This is your situation. You can do what you want with it. Hey, well, what would you like to work on? Again, undercutting their defiance by refusing to push back again and making it even worse. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that gives you a few ideas of how to handle that
situation. It does. It does. And again, it's the whole thing of like being in the present moment with the client.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes slowing down a little bit. Yeah. Okay, good.
Thanks. Molly, there's a situation that I get into when I'm working with people on an inpatient basis. And I only have like 15 or 20 minutes to give the client a diet. And doctors expect me to give the client everything they need before they leave the hospital. And it's an impossible situation, it seems like to me. But I want to give them something.
Right.
What can I do in that situation?
It is really frustrating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you are not alone, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Dietitians are put in this position all the time. Let me ask you something, Helen. Do you personally believe that in 15 or 20 minutes with most patients, you will be able to provide them with what they need so that, boom, they can follow the diet when they get home?
No, that's impossible. How can anybody do that?
Right.
So what can I give them?
Yeah. So, and also, do you believe that you can motivate a patient in that period of time and in that setting when they're anxious to get home? Do you believe that you can motivate them to make the changes that they need to make?
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my way of looking at it, Helen, is first to go ahead and acknowledge that to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you acknowledge it to the doctors and any doctors you develop a relationship with, go tell them that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is when you're there and the doctor's order is in the chart. And I know that is very frustrating. My suggestion is to first acknowledge it's going to be limited what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It is, right?
Yeah.
And you are asking, you and the patient are being indeed asked to do too much. So what might you be able to do? One of the things you might be able to do is at least find out from the patient where they're at. My guess is a lot of the times you have never met this person. You may have looked at the chart.
Right.
You may have seen them once, you know, but often you don't have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can you hook on to something that matters to them?
Yeah.
So finding out if they even know what diet they're supposed to be on. Do they know what their condition is?
Mm-hmm.
Do they know the name of it? Do they know, you know, because some people do know, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Some patients do know in detail the type of diabetes they have, they know all their medications, they know. And in that case, the only thing you may provide is possibly one little piece of information that they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
They may actually have a question about a particular food or whether they should be eating, you know, before or after they give themselves insulin. Or, you know, they may have detailed questions. Great. And so you could elicit that. You may also have patients who you realize don't have a clue. They don't even understand what their condition is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, find out as much as you can about what they do know and also what they're ready for. They may be ready for you to give them a teeny little piece of education about their condition and the role diet plays in it, which, of course, you went to school for, and you can do that, right? You can tell them the role of sodium in chronic heart failure, you know, and why they keep ending up back in the hospital, if that's where you realize the piece of information is missing. You're not going to be able to give them a full instruction on low sodium diet.
No.
And, you know, you can't do all of that. So see if you can manage to hook into something that they actually could listen to and want. There may also be patients who don't want to see you, are not ready for a thing.
And they're not listening.
They're not listening. They just want to go home. Their mm-hmm. ride's here already. You know those,
mm-hmm.
right? And if that's the case, that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Why beat your head against a wall? You know?
Yeah.
And it makes sense in those situations to, yeah, see if you can elicit a few questions to see if they do have anything they want to ask you. And then, of course, have some cards handy for the outpatient program or some resource for them for if and when they do have questions.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's all you can do. But Helen, does it sound helpful to take that step of acknowledging what a limited situation you are in?
Yeah. It does. I mean, it doesn't solve the problem at all.
It doesn't. It's a bigger systematic problem.
Right,
That you're being asked to do something that mm-hmm. you really can't do. And yeah, as I said, if you have a chance to get a relationship with any of the doctors so that they have a better understanding about what a limited amount you can do
mm-hmm.
and that it's important that they support you to tell the patients to see an outpatient dietitian and to realize
right.
it's long-term and there are changes that happen over time and
mm-hmm.
and all that.
Yeah.
But, well, good luck. I know it's hard.
Thank you. I really have a lot of questions about how to structure sessions, mm-hmm. such as what do I ask first?
Do you mean particularly at a first session, at an intake, or at all of your sessions?
Well, it has to do with the first session because I feel like a lot of my clients don't come back. So
this gets back to that same question of how do I structure the first session so they'll come back, basically?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's look at what you're wanting to accomplish because, of course, that will dictate how you want to structure the session.
Mm-hmm.
And if part of what you want to accomplish is to get people to come back, well, you don't want to structure it so that you're trying to fit in every little bit of information and factoid about nutrition for the client in the first session, right?
Right.
That won't be a big goal.
Mm-hmm.
You'll want to make sure to provide some little bits tidbits for the client to take home, but that mm-hmm. won't be the main purpose in the first
mm-hmm.
session.
Mm-hmm.
For example, some of the goals in the first session might be for you to try to get into the client's head to find out where they're at, why they're there, what they want from you. And that can take, it can take 2 minutes, 7 minutes, it can take mm-hmm. a significant amount of the session. I happen to believe it's worth taking that time to do that, to really listen to what the client wants, to unpack meaning, as we were talking before, and really make sure they know that you heard them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a better idea of then what to give them. Of course, you'll spend some time in the first session gathering medical data. Hopefully, you'll have somewhat of a chart in front of you already. But
mm-hmm.
if, when someday you're out in private practice, you may have to ask the client for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. And of course you have to do all that. But you also want to accomplish finding out why they're there and what they really want.
Mm-hmm.
And also what they already believe. Because what a client believes about their medical condition,
mm-hmm.
about their ability to make changes, about whether making these changes will actually give them what they want. You ought to know that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Because that then will dictate how the future sessions will go.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And also, of course, one of the things to ask in a first session is what a patient is expecting or wanting from you. I often will mm-hmm. pause partway through a first session. Well, actually, I always fit this in a first session. But what I always do is take a deep breath first and make it clear to the client that I'm shifting gears and saying, you know, I need something from you here. I need to find out what it is you're hoping for from me today, but also generally. Because, Helen, I need to know if a client wants menus and they want, you know, shopping lists and things like that. I want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
If what they want is to figure out why is it that they keep overeating, or they want something much more general, or they want to understand diabetes or how they got it. Or, there's so many different things of what they might want me to do for them.
Right.
So that to me, that's a vital part of the structure of most sessions, certainly the first one, but sometimes mm-hmm. you sprinkle it in mm-hmm. on other sessions mm-hmm. too. What do you want to go away with today, Joe? You know, what do you need from me today?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, clients can give you pretty clear ideas of what they want. Now, you started out this question by asking me how to structure sessions.
Right.
Have you gotten an answer to that?
Well, it seems like to structure the sessions, I first find out what they need from me.
Mm-hmm. That needs to be involved in it.
And yeah. I have to go from there.
Exactly. Then you go from there. Because if you're used to, for example, having a portion of your first session be the 10 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever of you explaining your handouts and going over the diet and everything, what if the client doesn't want that?
Well, what? Yeah.
Right?
And sometimes you see the glazing over.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So if you've elicited more information about what they want, then the rest of the session, assuming you have a little time left,
mm-hmm.
the structure is a little clearer.
Mm-hmm. That's
right?
true. Yeah.
Either that some people actually ask you to spend a fair amount of time clarifying what it is they really want. And you may spend the rest of the first session trying to figure out what their goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And other clients are ready for the handouts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they
mm-hmm.
want those from you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll ask, you know, and they'll demand them of you. And that's great because mm-hmm. you have them ready.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay, does that
give
you some ideas?
That does.
Yeah. I would suggest experimenting with it, though,
mm-hmm.
trying different structures. Because if you're like most of us, when you start out in practice, you sort of settle fairly quickly into a pattern of how first sessions go. You know, you gather medical information and then you do this and then you hand out your handouts and you go over them, you know. And so break it up a little bit.
Right.
Start playing with the structures and see
and
how
flexible. And pay attention.
Pay attention to what the client's telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Okay, we'll play around with that.
Yeah,
okay.
I will.
Good.
Thanks.
Okay.
One of the things that's come up for me in my practice is how to get clients to go to a therapist when they actually need a therapist. I may be working with a client for a few visits, and then I realize there's a psychological issue that they need to face, and they're getting in the way of making their diet changes the way.
Mm-hmm.
When I tell a client this, she generally refuses. So,
mm-hmm.
what do I do?
You sound frustrated.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and this is a very important issue. And I do get asked this a lot. You know, Helen, one of the things it makes sense to do in these situations first is to sort out what you're dealing with here. Is this a situation where, from a medical or ethical point of view, this person really needs to be in therapy? And it really is not okay to keep seeing them just as a dietitian if they're not in therapy. Examples would be, for example, if someone has a severe eating disorder,
mm-hmm.
if they have anorexia or are actively bulimic, these are clearly situations where seeing a dietitian alone is downright unethical and maybe even dangerous. And frankly, it's not helping the client
right.
because that isn't the way treatment works for mm-hmm. an eating disorder, right? So you're essentially colluding with the client in that situation, colluding in the belief that, oh, it's just about food. And with an eating disorder, it's not.
Right.
So
yeah.
If you continue to see them, you're both colluding with them and the meth of the eating disorder, but you're also doing something that is basically medically and ethically wrong.
Yeah.
So in those situations, it does make sense to put a limit on the number of times you will continue to see this client until they get in to see a therapist. In other words, there's an ultimatum here.
Hmm.
Whether you use the word ultimatum or not, yeah. Often I will word it, let's see, something like, you know, Lisa, we've been working together for a few times now, and you and I have talked about the fact that your weight is still going down, and I am getting very concerned about that. And I'm also very well aware that in order for us to get a handle on this and for you to begin to make some improvements, you and I can't do it alone. There needs to be a therapist here working with you who specializes in eating disorders. We need to make sure you're seeing a doctor. And that isn't happening yet. I'd be willing to see you maybe about one more time, but after that, you know, we would just have to end until you, you know, hook up with a therapist and with a doctor, because I just know that this isn't going to work this way. I'm glad to work with you. I really, you know, this is great working with you, but I also want to do it in a way that'll really help you. So that's one example, Helen, of a way of making clear what you know to be true and saying that you're willing to work with the person, but not continuing to do it.
Yeah, that means being really strong.
And being really assertive.
Yeah.
And most of us as women, we don't like being that assertive. And it almost could feel like we're rejecting the client.
Yeah,
and it makes sense to be strong and remember we're not rejecting the client. We're being strong for that client, advocating for that client about what we know to be true, that we're not going to get anywhere with just you and I working together,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my guess is, Helen, you also have situations where it's not that clear. For example, maybe an overeater who's been a chronic dieter and overeater over the years, and you work with her and you very quickly realize how much emotional eating is going on,
right,
for example. And you're aware that's not your area of expertise, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You may have some ideas, you know, helping her cope in those tough situations where she's eating for emotional reasons. But you're aware that this is not what you've been trained to do. Now, it's not necessarily totally unethical for you to continue to meet with her without her seeing a therapist. However, it's important for you to delineate for her where the line is,
mm-hmm,
and that you're not a therapist, and that that isn't where your training is, mm-hmm, and that there are people who are really good at this.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And hopefully, Helen, you have therapists you can refer to. That's one of the most important things. Develop relationships with therapists in your area who you feel confident referring to. So you can say to this person, you know, Judy, I know just the person for you,
right? Yeah.
Who I'm used to working with,
mm-hmm,
in a collaborative,
mm-hmm,
way. And you know what? I bet working with that therapist would be really helpful for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can personalize it,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to saying, Judy, you're messed up. You need a therapist. You know, none of us need to, you know, feel like we want to say something like that. Instead of saying you statements to this fictional Judy,
mm-hmm,
stick with I statements. Judy, you know what I know to be true is you and I can do this part. We can talk about the food and the eating habits and what you're saying to yourself about the food and how you plan ahead and how you shop. We can do all that. I'm aware, notice the I statement, Helen,
mm-hmm,
I'm aware that there's more to this that keeps coming up for you, doesn't it? And I'm aware that that isn't my area of expertise, and you and I need help here. Now, Helen, even with all of that, the client still may refuse, or she,
mm-hmm,
may sort of say yes, but then she never actually does make the appointment, right? And that happens a lot. In those situations, you know what I do? I become a broken record. Because, you know, Helen, even though I am a therapist in addition to being a dietitian, when it comes to working with eating disorders, acute eating disorders, I am the dietitian and I refer to a therapist. and the two of us work as a team. Oh. So I am used to making that referral, okay? And so if I notice that there's a client who, I mean, yeah, I could make some headway with them, but you know, it's as if we're being asked to operate with our hands tied behind our back. It really isn't working the best for the client. I become a broken record. So each session that I hear something about the emotional eating or about how they ate because they were upset at their mother or whatever, I will grab onto that and say, oh, you know, Judy, this sounds like one of those again, doesn't it? This is one of those situations that you and I aren't equipped to really go into. I mean, I'd be glad to listen to you, but, you know, this isn't my area of expertise. And remember, I do have that suggestion for that dietitian. So I become an absolute broken record about it.
Well, you have to be as stubborn, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, You have to be as stubborn back again. Yeah, and one can do it pleasantly. And after a while, it can even be sort of a joke, you know, and, you know, joking around about it, if that helps. But if it helps you to think of the metaphor that you would not expect a physician who has available to her certain types of treatments to only be confined to one treatment, if she knows there are other ones that would help too, right?
Right, yeah.
And so don't hem yourself in and hem the client in and continue to educate them about what you know works best. Okay? Does that sound helpful?
It does. It does. I mean, I know that I can't do everything myself, and by letting my client know that, I'm not undermining our relationship at all. In fact, I'm...
Yeah, and you're simply standing up for yourself and what you know about yourself and what works and what doesn't and what you can do and what you can't. Good. Well, good luck.
Thank you. Molly, I've been pretty successful at controlling my own weight for a number of years. And sometimes I like to share these ideas, things that have worked for me, share them with my clients. What do you think? Do you think this is okay?
Well, let me ask you, Helen. Let's take a moment first and reverse the situation.
Okay.
Have you ever been in a situation where you went to see a professional for something and you left feeling like that person talked about their life? And it may have been a little too much.
Yeah.
You have had that happen?
Yeah, I have. You know, my kid's pediatrician, he used to talk all the time about his own kids, like as if I cared about his kids.
Right.
You know, and he was a lot older than me, and I didn't feel like he understood what being a parent is like today. So, that didn't work for me.
Yeah. So you're aware that at least in that situation, it didn't work for you. And do you remember how much of the time you were with him? I mean, was it 90% of the time he talked about his kids, or was it just here and there?
Well, it probably wasn't as much as I'm remembering, but it sort of seemed like it. And I wondered how much he was really listening to me about, you know, and my concerns.
Yeah. You know, Helen, my guess is there would be some similarity, at least, between your experience with your pediatrician and at least with some of your clients and you. And that's not to say that you or your pediatrician had bad intentions. You know, of course he was trying to help you out. My guess is that because a client is there for their issues, they will have a pretty small tolerance for listening to yours. That may be hard for you to hear, but that's one of the reasons I asked you to look at it from the other side first. So my general suggestion, I don't believe there are any hard and fast rules, but my general suggestion is sort of to err on the side of not disclosing stuff about your life. Now, that doesn't mean that the specific techniques that you have figured out over the years might not be helpful for a particular client.
Well,
they might, right?
Telling
it to the client as your story may be distracting. You know, may get them off track.
Mm-hmm.
The other possibility is that if you're sharing your story and you're letting them know that you've struggled with your weight before they ask you, some clients, of course, may ask you.
Mm-hmm.
They do. That's another question.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're sharing your story, there may be some landmines there for you, Helen, for you and the client.
Hmm.
Because how do you know that the client doesn't, for example, think, oh, well, she's been successful. Okay, she has the magic wand. I'm going to be successful with her. Well, she may be, but mm-hmm. everybody's different.
Yeah.
The struggle she has may be different than yours. And yeah, she can learn some things from you, but this is her story.
Mm-hmm.
This is her experience when she comes into your office. It's not yours, right? You get to learn from your experience to help her. But remember that it's her story now,
mm-hmm.
or his or her, whoever the client is.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense to focus on them. Can you think of ways that you may be able to share your pearls of wisdom, your nuggets, keeping it from being about you?
Well, just in that way. I mean, some people have found it helpful.
Right, wording
not
real, it that
yeah,
way.
I mean, not yeah. not saying I.
Mm-hmm.
This is what works for me. And
right. You know, and Helen, as you say that, that reminds me that one of the pitfalls of saying it that way, saying I did mm-hmm. it this way, is that you're the dietitian. You're the one in, well, maybe the white coat. None of us wear white coats anymore these days. But, you know, you're the professional. So mm-hmm. everything you say indeed has more power and authority. Sometimes we forget that. We think we're just regular people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does have a lot of power and authority already. So you don't have to add to it that it's about you and you did this and you were successful. Again, that's just distracting.
Well, with my pediatrician, the feeling that I came from away from it was that this was the right way to do it.
Right, because he was a pediatrician,
mm-hmm.
and that was the only right way.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, and it may foreclose the patient being able to say, oh, well, that's an interesting idea, but you know what? I don't think it's going to work for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They may think, oh, okay, just like a little puppy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They'll say yes and then go and try it and it doesn't work for them and then they think there's something wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not getting anybody anywhere.
Nope.
Right? So the more you can keep yourself out of it and say, you know, here's an idea. Do you think this would work for you?
Yeah.
You're again giving them the power.
Yes.
And keeping them in control, and it's their story.
And just make, and it's yeah. a suggestion instead of something precious. That
mm-hmm.
I, you know.
Right, pearls of wisdom that
yeah.
they better find useful.
Yeah.
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 You know, another thing you can do in these situations is to literally ask your client to ask you something. In other words, if you're at that point of going, ooh, 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 I have a cool idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, we all feel that at points. When you're at that moment, say, you know, I've got a particular idea or a tip here. Is this the time to ask, you know, offer it to you? Are you ready for it? So then the client can think and say, yeah, I am ready for a cool idea
hmm.
or a suggestion, or no, I'm not. Generally, the client will say yes, and then you'll have their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they'll assume that you're giving them an idea for them that they mm-hmm. can consider and that it's their choice because they've had a choice to ask you for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowing them to stay in control about it.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's another idea. You know, there's another sort of trick I've learned to suggest to people. If you were to look back, Helen, at the various times that you've told your story or a little piece of your story
mm-hmm.
to clients, if you notice that you tend to tell it in almost exactly the same way
yeah.
every time, chances are it's not tuned into that particular client terribly well, right?
Yeah.
If it's sort of like yeah. a little recitation you give, you know, like a little poem. Or, you know.
Yeah.
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 However, if what you're doing is you're sharing a little tidbit of something and it's keyed into that client and what they were just talking about, mm-hmm. chances are each time you do that, it'll be very different. Because it'll be about the client. And you'll give them this little piece of something that you've learned. But you wouldn't give that piece maybe to hardly any other clients. You'd give them something else from your story,
mm-hmm.
right? If you were really clued into the client, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way to sort of test yourself and to sort of notice.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying your story the same every time, that may not be very helpful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see that.
Yeah. Well, just keep noticing.
And
assessing that for yourself.
Because I feel like there's value in it.
Yes, and I bet there is value. There's no question that there's value for you. You struggled, and maybe you still struggle with your weight, and you're proud of that. And that's an achievement, and I'm proud of you too, right? The question is, how can we, when we're in an office, contain that part, the part that we're all proud of and everything, and keep it being just in service of the client? That's the tricky part. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. That's something that is a really good idea to assess as you go along, every few months or something, and if you want to find a colleague to talk about it with and sort of see how you're doing or give me a call back sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'll do
well,
that.
Well, experiment with that.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Helen, how are we doing now on this issue that you brought in initially about getting clients to return for visits?
You know, it's so funny. We've talked about so many things, and I have so many ideas now. I can see, you know, how I can bring them back into my sessions now.
So you feel like we've gotten somewhere. We've gotten some ideas.
Yeah, and I'm excited.
And you have some experiments. We talked about at least several experiments that you could try and
yes. I mean, they're experiments for me and things that I can present to my clients as experiments, too, which makes it all kind of more exciting.
So you have some things to play with, and we could talk again in, say, a month and see how it's going and then see if you have other questions that come up.
Okay.
Now, notice, Helen, what I just did. I modeled for you what you can do at the end of a session with your clients, right?
Right.
You can ask them how we're doing on what they brought in and then quickly sort of summarize and then suggest what you'll talk about when you get back together with them, right?
Right.
So that's exactly.
And then they know they want to or have to.
Yeah, or at least will be curious about the experiments, right?
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay. So I'm glad I got a chance to get back to where we started.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Good.